Okay, so Parashat Toldot, that's which is now the shift really to the life of Yitzchak. It's one of the things mentioned by a number of the Mefarshim, is the fact that Avraham gets a lot of column inches and Yaakov gets lots of column inches, but Yitzchak gets hardly any, and the column inches that he gets are either in association with his, primarily in association with his sons, so the big parsha of Yitzchak is to do with the brachot, there's the Akedah, but that's really to do with his father, and there's the finding of a wife, but that also doesn't really involve him. He's tertiary, peripheral to it all. So that's like kind of interesting that Yitzchak is a hidden character. In any event, the parasha begins for Ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham holid et Yitzchak. These are the generations of Yitzchak, Abram's son. And Avraham bore Yitzchak, or was the father of Yitzchak. So the obvious question, which is asked by a number of the Mefarshim, is if we're saying already Ele Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, then you don't need to tell me that Avraham holid et Yitzchak. It's obvious. This is Isaac Abram's son. Obviously, his father is Abraham. So let's start with Rashi. Rashi tells us, Yitzchak ben Avraham, since it said Yitzchak ben Avraham, that's why Nizkak Lomar Avraham holid et Yitzchak. Specifically because it said that Yitzchak was the son of Avraham, we need to be told that Avraham was really his father. Because the scoffers in the generation were saying, actually Sarah became pregnant from her stay with Avimelech. She'd been married to Avraham Avinu for a very long time, and she never became pregnant. And then all of a sudden, soon after she'd been with Avimelech, she became pregnant. So that's what everybody was saying, that this kid wasn't Avraham's kid. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Tzar klaster panav domela Avraham. He made Yitzchak look the spitting image of Avraham. Kadeshi Omru Akol, so that everybody would say as soon as they saw him, oh, Avraham Olid et Yitzchak, can tell who you look like. That's even in the baby pictures, that Yitzchak looked like Avraham. V'zeu shekatuv kan, and this is the meaning of the pasuk here, Yitzchak ben Avraham haya, Yitzchak was definitely the son of Avraham, shahare eidut yesh shavraham Olid et Yitzchak, because there was eidut, there was proof that Avraham was the father of Yitzchak. So that's a great explanation that Rashi's giving us. I've got a question on it, though. My question is, why do we need to be told that? It might well be true, and it might well have been necessary that Yitzchak had to look very much like his father so that everybody would realize who the father was. But that's hardly important for us in terms of what we need to know. We need to know anything that teaches us a lesson. Here it's just telling you, okay, there were some scoffers around who said that Yitzchak wasn't really Avraham's son. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it clear that Yitzchak was Avraham's son. But we know from the Torah that Yitzchak was Avraham's son. We don't have any doubt about it. We're told, in Parashat Vayera, that Avraham was the father of Yitzchak. So I don't need anything else to tell me that Avraham was the father of Yitzchak. So that's a question I've got on Rashi. I presume there's an answer. I don't know what the answer is.
My apologies. Sorry. My phone went.
You missed my question, so you won't be able to give an answer.
Oh.
But don't worry. No, it's worth staying. It's worth staying. It's just a kasha on Rashi. But we'll go on, and we'll look now at the Netziv.
So if you come in late, you sit right next to the rabbi.
Exactly. That's the best seat to have. I generally look further away, so you can fall asleep there, and it doesn't matter. Okay, so let's look at the Netziv. The Netziv gives us another explanation. Avraham holit et Yitzchak, zo michlal toldotav. That's in terms of telling us the family history, the generations. Shebechol drachav v'halichotav haya nikar v'rashum shehu beno shel Avraham. That's in every aspect of his life and the way he lived and his behavior, it was clear that he was the son of Avraham. V'lochein Yishmael, as opposed to Yishmael. Shayagam came ben Avraham, that he was also the son of Avraham. But it wasn't clear from his behavior, from the way that he lived his life, that he was the son of Avraham. So really what the Netziv is telling us is that these two terms, Yitzchak ben Avraham and Avraham Olitet Yitzchak, tell us different things. Yitzchak ben Avraham tells us a biological relationship, that Avraham was the biological father of Yitzchak. Avraham Holidet Yitzchak means that Avraham was the father of Yitzchak in the sense that Yitzchak followed in Avraham's ways. Avraham mentored Yitzchak. Avraham sort of imposed upon him or influenced him in the way that he would the way that he would live and the way that he would behave. So it's two separate things. And as we know particularly from Yishmael, but we know in general, a person can be, you know, the biological son of somebody on the one hand, but in terms of the way they live their life, it's totally different. You know, we like to have the expression, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, except sometimes it falls and then it rolls away. So sometimes the apple does fall far from the tree. That's the Yishmael. With Yitzchak, the apple wasn't falling far from the tree. So therefore, the Netziv says these are two different different aspects. One is the physical aspect, and one is, if you like, the personality or behavioral aspect of Yitzchak's existence. Let's look also at what Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein says in his Sefer Tosefet Bracha. He says, "Efshar lahatim kefel l'shom ben Avraham holid." So we can try and explain this repetition. Al pi hamavua b'kama b'komot b'gemara, according to what is quite a well-known halachic Talmudic principle, to kol hamalamed le'echad Torah nechshav ki'ilu yalado. Anybody who teaches somebody else Torah is as if in some way they are that person's father. Umitzba'er. So that tells us the yeshne minei toladot. There are two ways in which you can be sort of related to a person. Toladachumrit or gufnit. So you've got the physical way. V'tolaruchanit, and the spiritual way. Uvaha kefel lashon ramei. So why do we have this repetition here? It's to indicate or suggest to us ki haya Avraham la'av liYitzchak v'shnei minei toladot, that Avraham was Yitzchak's father in both ways, b'chumrit v'ruchnit. He was Avraham's. He was Yitzchak's father physically and also spiritually. Shayam lamdo mechancho b'darchem unat Hashem. Not only did he physically father Yitzchak, but also Hayam Elamdo Mechancho B'derech Hashem. He brought Yitzchak up in the ways that lead to Hashem. So in any event, what we've got here is these two ways. That it's not just simple repetition, but we've got the repetition because it's giving two different aspects of fatherhood. Okay, so we know that Yitzchak was the son of Avraham. The next pasuk, Vayitzchak ben Arbaim Shana, Bekachto et Rivka bat Betuel Harami, Mipadan Aram. So Yitzchak was 40 when he got married to Rivka bat Betuel from Padan Aram. Achot Lavan Harami Lolisha, the sister of Lavan Harami. And Rashi points out, why have we got all these details about Rivka? Don't we know it already? So Rashi tells us that it's reminding us that even though Rivka came from a wicked environment and a wicked family, that nevertheless, she herself was a righteous woman. That's Vayetar Yitzchak Ladonai Lenochach Ishto, Ki Akarahi. Yitzchak prayed to Hashem opposite his wife because she was barren. Vaye ater lo Adonai, and Hashem responded to his entreaties. Vatar Rivka ishto, and Yitzchak's wife Rivka became pregnant. This word vaye etar, it's related to the word, an atar is a pitchfork. That's so what's a pitchfork got to do with praying? That's, you don't prod Hashem with a pitchfork if he's not, if you feel he's not listening to you. It's, what do you do with a pitchfork? A pitchfork, you take the bundles of hay and you toss them with the pitchfork and you pile them all up. And that's why Yetara means you throw all your prayers onto Hashem. You pile up more and more prayers on top of Hashem. It's a very strong lashon of tefillah. And certainly in terms of quantity, you know, you've got this image of just, you know, overwhelming Hashem with these tefillot. And it's, I think it's a beautiful word because you've got vayetar and vayater. So to toss all these prayers at Hashem and then to have the answer tossed back to you. That's it. It's a very nice reflection there. And Rivka became pregnant. The sons fought inside her. She said, if this is what is happening to me, number of ways of understanding what that means. Why, you know, I'm different to everybody else, or if it's so terrible, you know, why did I want this to happen? So she went lidrosh et Hashem. So what does that mean? Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Vatelech lidrosh, Levait Midrasho Shel Shame. She went to the base of Medrash of Shame. Shame, we know, was a God-fearing personality. That's possibly identified a few weeks ago with Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. That's, and he was a Navi of some sort. So Rivka went to Shame to find out what was happening to her. That's, now a number of the Mepharshim ask, hold on a minute, why did she bother going to Shame? That she's married to Yitzchak, and her father-in-law is Avraham Avinu. That's, however good Shame was, Avraham Avinu must have been better. That's, it's a shame to go to somebody else. That's, why did she go to Shame ben Noach when she could have gone to Avraham Avinu? So let's look at the Maharal. The Maharal in the Gur Aryeh. Levait Midrashul Shel Shame. So why didn't she ask either our husband or our father-in-law? We can suggest a hayatah Rivka savura. Rivka was of the opinion, maybe it's because she was wicked. Maybe she'd done something wrong and she was being punished for it with this difficult pregnancy. Shamru Abutinu Zal, because Chazal tell us, Ki hanashim hatzidkaniot, lo hayu befitka shel chava. Chazal tell us that righteous women weren't included in the curse against Chava. Chava and her descendants were told, Beisiv tel tibanim, that you're going to, in the future, you're going to suffer with pain when you bear children. However, the Gemara in the first Perek of Sota tells us, Dehem Yoldot, Belot Tsar Ibu Veleda, that righteous women won't suffer in this way. Righteous women will have easy pregnancies and easy births. Paitamit Yare Shitit Gana Beine Bala. And so she was worried now when she, you know, says to her husband, Yitzchak, oi, I feel terrible. I've, thrown up every morning for the past 3 months. And every time I walk past a Beit Avot Hazara or a Beis Medrash, you know, I've got this terrible, jumping around inside me. I was like, oh, so she's not such a righteous woman. Or she Omar, Avraham and Yitzchak, Sheina Haguna Lo. Or that Avraham will say to Yitzchak, oh, I'm not so impressed with your wife. And therefore Yitzchak might marry somebody else or divorce her. And that's why she didn't go to Avraham or Yitzchak. She was worried about what they would say about her, what they would think about her. Other Mepharshim say she didn't go to them for more simple. She didn't want to worry them. That's Avraham already is an old man. Yitzchak wasn't so young himself. That's, they'll worry too much. That's why I go to somebody outside the family circle, and they'll be able to help. Tal.
So just coming back to this Gemara, there's another slightly dangerous precedent that every woman who suddenly realizes that she's having some form of birth or conception, or, well, not conception, but basically birth or antenatal pain, that she's not a righteous woman.
Adamin Sadiq Baaretz Asher Yaseh Tov V'lo Yecheta. You know, who's on the level of Sarai Menu, of Rivka Menu? Yeah, so people will realize that they, you know, they're not perfect. People aren't perfect. I mean, it's your job to go home and tell your wife that she's perfect.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, you know, if she experiences pain in a pregnancy, so you can also, you can also tell her that she's normal. That's, perfect and normal. Perfectly normal. That's, okay. So that's how Rashi understands it. Fatelech l'droshet Hashem. She went to inquire from the Beit Medrash of Shem. As we've seen, explanations of why she didn't go to Avraham. Some of the Rishonim do say that she went to Avraham. That's Fatelech l'droshet Hashem. They say, yeah, she went to Avraham. So we've got a machloket in the Mefarshim there. Look at the Ramban, though. The Ramban says, Fatelech l'droshet Hashem, l'shon Rashi. What does it mean, l'droshet Hashem? To find out from Hashem, la'gid ma yehi b'sofa. So that Hashem will tell her what's going to be. L'drosh here means to inquire. She went to inquire. And, you know, in Hebrew, that word l'drosh means to ask for something. However, the Ramban says that in the context of tefillah, that would not be a correct use of the word. V'lo matzati drisha etzel Hashem, rak lehit palel. Right, rather, sorry, it would be the right word. When you find the word darash in the context of Hashem, it usually means lehit palel, to daven. Kitam darashti et Hashem va'aneni. That's, I prayed to Hashem and he answered me. Darshuni v'chiu. Chai ani im edrosh lachem. Various examples, right, where we use the word darash to refer to praying to Hashem. So the Ramban solves our problems. Vatenich l'roshesh Hashem simply means that she prayed to Hashem that she would be all right. And then she got this message that, you know, don't worry, but you've got, you know, shnei goyim v'vidnechu, shnei lumim, you're going to have two very different children. I don't want to look at the story of the birth of Yaakov and Esav inside. Just want to flag up, you know, the big question, which interestingly does not seem to be really addressed by the classical Mefarshim, by the medieval commentators, but is addressed somewhat by the 18th, 19th, 20th century commentators. That's, Rivka is told that from the outset, she's got two very different children inside her, and they're going to go very different paths. And the Mefarshim, you know, point out, a lot of them without seeming to bat an eyelid even, that, okay, so man's lot in life is preordained. That's, it's preordained from the womb. Or some Mefarshim say even from before the womb. Mimeayich, that means, if you like, from the fallopian tubes. That's, before you even get to the womb, it's preordained. That's whether you're going to be a Yaakov or an Esav. If it's preordained, even from that early on, then, you know, what chance do you have? That's,
How
can Teshuvah help? And the whole notion of Bechira Choshet and any of these things, it's, you know, if everything is, you know, you're born that you're going to be righteous, you're going to be wicked, then it's, what's the point of trying? That's, so an approach taken by some of the Achronim is to say that everybody's born with a particular type of personality. And then the question is, how are we going to harness that personality? So nobody's born to be righteous or to be wicked, but people are born to be, quiet or rambunctious. People are born to be, you know, violent or gentle. And what you've got to do is you've got to use those tchunot, those character, inbred characteristics to serve Hashem. So, you know, if you're, you know, a violent person, so it's going to be a harder job for you. That doesn't mean to say that you can't come close to Hashem. That's, but it's going to be more challenging, and you perhaps have to, that's, you know, use your, you know, harness your natural inclinations in a particular way. The Gemara talks about, you know, a person who's born under the influence of the planet Mars is going to be a bloodshedder. So you've got a choice. You can either become a murderer or a shochet. That's, you know, put your natural tendencies to a good use. So that's the way that some of the Achronim address it. But the more medieval commentators are quite comfortable with saying that, no, the world is made up of people who are, if you like, pro-God and anti-God. Pro-Brexit and anti-Brexit. That's whatever you, however you want to put it. So that's the way the world is. And that, you know, halacha hi Esav sone Yaakov, that there's always going to be a tension between Esav and Yaakov, and that the role of the Jew is to struggle and to get out of the grasp of the Esav. So that's just sort of flagging up something which is, you know, a fairly key theme in this week's parsha. In any event, we have an interlude, an interesting interlude that doesn't seem to really tell us an awful lot. And that's the story of the wells. Vayeshev Yitzchak, Vayashov Yitzchak, Vayachporet Be'erot HaMayim Asher Chafru B'mei Avraham Aviv. So Yitzchak returned and he redug the wells that had been dug in the time of Avraham his father. Vayisatzmun Plishtim Acharei Mot Avraham, and the Plishtim had filled them in after the death of Avraham. Vayikra Lahen Shemot Kashemot Asher Karan Lahen Aviv. And Yitzchak called them exactly the same names as they were called in his father's time. We sometimes have this mind, you know, when we read this, you know, wells, you know, it's a small well with a handle there and a rope and a bucket, and you, you know, bring the bucket up. You know, it was much more significant than that. You know, these wells, you know, in an area where water was scarce, you know, these wells were big places where everybody came. If you owned a well, you'd found a well, then, you know, that's, that put you into a very important, you know, position. You presumably could become wealthy from it, wealthy, and you could also, you know, be important and prominent. That's, you know, it's probably like what we think of an oil well now. That was a water well, you know, it was so important. Yitzchak's servants dug, and they found a spring of water. There was a row there between the shepherds from Gerar and Yitzchak's shepherds, saying the water belongs to us. So it was called Esek. Esek means tension or a fight, because there was a fight there. And then they dug another well. And they fought about that as well. So he called it Sitna. Sitna is like hatred. That's or a stumbling point. Then he left there, and he dug another well. This time they didn't fight about it. So he called it Rechovot. And he said, so Hashem has given us, allowed us to be expansive. So we've got here three wells, to which presumably Yitzchak said, well. So we've got three wells. What's the relevance of these three wells? So I think on a previous occasion we've looked at the Ramban, who indicates that they are to do with the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, and the future Beit HaMikdash. I just want to bring to your attention comments here of Rav Moshe Sternbach in his Sefer Talmudat. This is a very, very useful lesson for life. So we've got quite a lot of space that is devoted to this story of the wells. And there's a reason for it. With the first well, there was a riv, a division between them. There was an argument. Hainu dinu dvarim. That means they had a verbal argument. They had, you know, this one said this and the other one said that. Ukshenit mashcha hamariva, higili de sitna. That festered, and by the time they came to digging the second set of wells, or the second well, they came to a situation of sitna. It wasn't just an argument, but it was they hated each other. The sanuzel was there. Uchumosha satan beinahem. It was like the satan was there. They really, it wasn't just, you know, a bit of argy-bargy, but it was they, sorry?
Handbags, as you say.
Right, okay. It was, you know, a real fight. Umishetik Yitzchak Mekomo, but when Yitzchak relocated, Vayatek Misham, Yitzchak left there and went to settle somewhere else, Zacha Shehaya Shashem Yarchivlo, then he merited that Hashem allowed him to expand, Vifrehu Ba'aretz, and was fruitful in the land. Vezeu Musar Haskel, and this teaches us an important lesson. Shelifamim nigram riv bidvarim putim. Sometimes you have an argument over the most stupid things, small things that should never have become an argument. That's uchshetit mashecha riv magim lidei sina. But when you let it get blown out of proportion, everybody ends up hating each other. There's some silly argument. Somebody sat in my seat, you know, last Shabbos afternoon or something, whatever. And before you know it, that's, you know, the whole of Northwest London has been, pulled into some mega row. That if you give up, and I find I'm not going to get involved in this, let me go and find somewhere else to settle. Then you'll be successful. And that, he says, is very, very correct. Very appropriate. Keep far away from machloket and discord. And then you'll merit bracha v'hatzlacha. You're in a situation where there's rows. That's, go away and, find somewhere else to go. That's, my late father, Alav HaShalom, always when my brother and I were fighting as kids, he always used to say it takes two to have an argument. That's, you know, if you don't like the argument, go away. That's, and you can, do something by yourself. And that's exactly what he's saying there. We see from Yitzchak, first time there was a riv, second time there was sitna, there was hatred. What did Yitzchak do? Well, let them fight amongst themselves. I'm not interested in being amongst those people. I'll go somewhere else. I can have a better life elsewhere. I'll avoid the hatred. And indeed, we see that Yitzchak was very, very successful. Now I want to move towards the big part of the Sedra, which is, of course, the brachot that are given to Yaakov and Esav. The brachot apparently were intended for Esav. Yitzchak called Esav, said, I want to give you a bracha before I die. That's, and Yaakov, by various means, was able to assume the brachot. So one of the first questions to address, there are lots of sort of mega themes here that need to be addressed. One of them is, why was Yitzchak going to bless Esav? Esav was Yodea Tzayedish Sadeh. He was a wicked person, certainly portrayed by Chazal as being a wicked person. That Yaakov was Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. That's why wasn't it obvious to Yitzchak which son he should be blessing? So I think the answer is in the real answer, I think, is in the pshat of the psukim. How does the perek begin? Vayhiki zaken Yitzchak vatichana inav merot. When Yitzchak became old, vatichana inav merot, he became blind and was unable to see. So he called Esav, his older son, and said, I want to bless you. Which is what you just gave me when I sneezed. And Rashi says, you know, why are we told that Yitzchak's eyes became dim? Rashi gives us, three answers. The first answer is that it was because Esav's wives were busy burning their incense. Alternatively, it was because when he'd been on the Mizbeach for the Akedah, he'd looked heavenwards and Malachi Asharet had cried and their tears had dropped into his eyes. Davar Acher, or another explanation, which I think is the most pshat-based explanation, is Kadesh Itol Yaakov et HaBrachot. He was blind so that Yaakov would take the, be able to get the brachot. That's Livriot. That's, but really, Vatichena Inav Merot, it's not so much really what Rashi's saying, but Vatichena, you know, Esav, he couldn't see, Yitzchak was blind, so he didn't know what was going on. That's the point. He was misled. It was very easy when you're blind. You can, when people are talking to you, you're aware of them, but what's going on? That's outside the door. You've got no idea what's happening. That's, somebody spoke to me, a couple of years ago. They'd applied for a particular job. That's somewhere as a director of operations of some large Jewish charity. That's the problem was that they were going to have to be out of the country for 6 months. That's for various reasons. That's, and they thought, well, you know what? We can have a daily, you know, Skype meeting and I'll direct things, you know, on from Skype. We'll have a meeting every morning, meeting every evening. That's, you know, then after 6 months, I'll come and, you know, be there in person. I said, forget it. I said, you'll never know. You know, the people who are facing the camera, you'll know what they're saying. You never know what's being said by the person standing behind the, you know, behind the camera. That's, and that was Yitzchak's problem. He was blind, so he wasn't able to see what was happening. However, some of the Mepharshim want to say there was something more fundamental going on. I want to look at two approaches, really. I want to look at Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, and I want to look at the Malbim. Let's start with Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky and Emet Liakov. V'odni Reb Beveyor Inyanzeh. Seems that we can explain this matter. Sheratza Yitzchak Sha Brachot Yula Esav. Yitzchak wasn't so out of things, and he very deliberately and consciously wanted Esav to get the brachot. Tine sod ha brachot shin baruchu boha avot baolam hazeh. What were the brachot about that the avot were getting? B'ma'ein olam haba. That's, and these corresponded to brachot for the future. Humishum shechayehem hayu chaye kiddush Hashem. The avot lived lives which were dedicated to being mekadesh Hashem, to sanctifying God's name. V'hamlachat haborei gam ba'aretz, and making sure that everybody in the world knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king of the world. Uchamoshevi Rashi b'shem Razal. That's as Rashi says in Perek Kaf Dalet. Ach shavu elokei hashamayim velokei haaretz. Now that's Hashem is the God of the heavens and God of the earth. This is where, you know, the shvua that Abraham imposes upon Eliezer when he goes to find a wife. Now he's known as elokei hashamayim velokei haaretz. Sheu galtiv b'fi habriyot. I've made everybody know that there's this God. Avan kashela kachani mibeit avi'i. When God took me from my father's household, haya elokei hashamayim velo elokei haaretz. He was the God of heaven, not the God of earth. Shelo hayu ba'olam makirim bo. That's, nobody in the world really recognized God. Ushmo. Lo ushmo lo hayag ragil ba'aretz. And people weren't talking about God. But what did Avraham do? Avraham promoted God amongst the people. That was his mission. And that was the mission of the Avot. Ulafichach Yitzchak Avinu. So therefore Yitzchak, he realized that Yaakov was an unambitious person who was happy to stay in the tent, sitting, learning his Gemara, and not being bothered by anybody in the world. He thought, Yaakov is too cloistered in his ivory tower. And that's not what Hashem wants. Ki lo le malachim nitzna Torah. Because the Torah wasn't given to angels. וכן ארץ ישראל שנבחרה למדינה שעל ידי עבודתה יקיימו חלקים חשובים שבתורה, כחיי עם שכולו עובד השם, and likewise ארץ ישראל, which was given to the Jewish people, and significant parts of the mitzvot in the Torah can only be properly observed in Eretz Yisrael, with a people that's serving Hashem in every way. V'lo bazeh chelek Yaakov. And this wasn't what Yaakov was interested in. She'eino hachshara liyot osek yishuvo shel olam. Some of the mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael are to do with, planting your fields and harvesting your fields and giving your tithes and appointing a king and building a Beit HaMikdash and all these sorts of things. Yaakov wasn't interested in any of that. Yaakov wanted to sit in his study with his Sfarim, and the less people that bother him, the better. Therefore, Yitzchak genuinely thought that it would be better to give Esav the bracha and bless him with Tal HaShamayim Shmanei Haaretz, the dew of the heaven and the fat of the land. That was how Torah would be promoted to the whole world. But once that Yaakov got the bracha, the first bracha, so then he was given the bracha of Avraham Avinu. But the point that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is making, very importantly, is that Yitzchak thought that to be able to promote the name of Hashem, you have to have an interaction with other people as well. And Yaakov wasn't interested in that interaction. Yaakov wasn't interested in this world, and therefore wasn't interested in using this world to serve Hashem. So therefore, Yitzchak hoped that Esav would be the one who would be able to serve Hashem. Okay, Yaakov would still sit there and learn, and Esav would go out and proselytize and infuse people. That's maybe I'm being a bit unfair like this, but Yaakov would be the brisker and Esav would be the Lubavitcher. That's what Yitzchak had in mind. So one would go to Gush and one would go to Eish. However we want to say it. That's what Yitzchak had in mind. He thought that Yaakov was not cut out to be a recruiter for the Jewish people. And therefore he wanted to give the brachot to Esav.
I'm still a little bit confused understanding that philosophy. Why would the fat of the land of the land either encourage or enable Esav more?
Esav will use it properly in terms of, he'll plant. The Torah, the rules of the Torah are given to us to observe. If you're not interested in planting fields, what's the point of having the laws of Trumot and Masot and Leket and Shechah and Peah, etc.? What's the point of, Yaakov doesn't care if he never gives a Peah to the poor. He'll sit and learn. Somebody else can give a Peah to the poor. As he doesn't not like the poor, he just doesn't want to get involved in that sort of thing. It's a tircha. He'd rather not have produce and just have papa melach tochal. Limited food. Get on with his learning. Whereas enable Esav to live a full life and to serve Hashem with that full life. That's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's saying. Let's turn over and look at what the Malbim has to say. So the Malbim has a whole load of questions. Essentially, the questions that we're familiar with. Why did Yitzchak want to bless Esav? Why did Rivka think that it was legitimate to try and to steal the brachot? Why did Yaakov agree, etc., etc., etc.? So he says as follows. Why did Yitzchak want to give the brachot at this point in time? We need to look at the immediately previous pasuk, chapter 26, verse 35, or 34 and 35. Esav married these wives, and they were a source of emotional aggravation to Yitzchak and Rivka. Esav lakach nashim mibnot Canaan. Esav married out. He married Canaanite women. V'shahayu morat ruach liYitzchak and Rivka. Not only did he marry out, but they were a source of aggravation to his parents. So at this point, Yitzchak realized that Esav wasn't supposed to be, or wasn't deserving of Birkat Avraham. He realized that Esav was not the right person to get the bracha. V'yada ki Yaakov levado. He realized that it was only Yaakov who ought to get this bracha. Partly because Yaakov had already purchased the Bechora and indicated that he wanted to serve Hashem. And also because of his natural righteous personality. It was clear to Yitzchak that Yaakov was going to get Birkat Avraham. And he realized that Yaakov's descendants would be focused on Avodat Hashem. So once he realized that Yaakov was going to be the one who inherited the mantle of spiritual leadership, he was now worried about both his sons. He was worried about Esav, because Esav now isn't going to be part of that bracha that was given to Avraham Avinu. He's just going to be like anybody else in the world. And he was also worried about Yaakov. That's Yaakov is going to be fixated, exclusively focused on Avodat Hashem. Yaakov's not going to be involved in material things. Having to work in the fields distracts you from Avodat Hashem. As Chazal say in the Gemara, in Masechet Brachot, if a person's plowing in the plowing season, and sowing in the sowing season, and harvesting in the harvest season, etc., etc., Torah Tam Matai Nesait, when's he going to be able to learn Torah? Who's going to fight on his behalf and protect him? People who are that spiritually and intellectually refined are generally physically weedy. How's Yaakov going to contend with those who want to conquer him? Yaakov mitoch anyav utlishat chomro. So now Yitzchak has got a quandary. He's worked out which son is going to be the heir to Avraham's brachot and which one isn't. Now he's worried that Yaakov, as the heir to the brachot, is not going to be able to survive because he doesn't have the physical skills or wherewithal to look after himself. And he's worried that Esav is going to assimilate, because he's got no interest in spirituality. So therefore, what did he decide to do? Lachin ratzasha shnei banav yulam echad. He thought, you know what? Let's combine the two of them together. Let's create one nation out of the two sons. Ki Yisrael v'shevet Levi, like we have with the, 11 tribes in Shevet Levi. V'ratzal avarech et Esav rov oshe v'daganti roshu v'gvura l'milchama. So he thought, you know what? I'll bless Esav with all sorts of physical success. V'zera Yaakov yumyuchadim rak lavodat Hashem, k'shevet laviach areichein. And Yaakov will be devoted to avodat Hashem. U'v'nei Esav yaspiku lahem tirpam v'lechem chukam v'yaginu ba'adam mikol tzar. And Esav would provide for Yaakov. So we don't need to go through the rest of the Malbim inside, but really the Malbim is saying Yitzchak had it all thought out very carefully. He realized he's got two sons. One's fixated on spirituality. One's not interested in spirituality at all. Neither of them can survive in the way that he wants them to be, as they are. Yaakov will perish by the sword. He'll be wiped out. And Esav will assimilate. So therefore, Yitzchak's plan was, why don't I make them dependent on each other? Why don't I give brachot to Esav, that Esav will have superiority in terms of this world, physical things, power, all these things, and at the same time will provide for Yaakov? That's what he thought would be, because he realized that Esav wasn't suitable for the Birkat Avraham. But he thought Esav could be like a Yisachar Zvulun arrangement. One of them learns and one of them works and gets the schar. And that's exactly what Yitzchak had in mind. So that's the approach of the Malbim. Let's just briefly touch on a couple more, two more themes. Rav Soloveitchik addressed the question of how come Rivka believed that what she was doing was so right that she could interfere with what Yitzchak was planning. So let's see what he says. What was the bracha that Yitzchak gave? That Hashem should give you the dew of the heavens and the fat of the land. When Jacob brought the birthright from Esau, Jacob attained the privilege of serving in the Beit HaMikdash. Isaac's blessings, on the other hand, were meant to confer material benefits. We see that, you know, Yitzchak isn't, you know, you think this is, you know, he's nearing the end of his life, or he thinks he's nearing the end of his life. He wants to bless his son. You'd have thought that he wants to give him something spiritual. He doesn't. Jacob wanted a God-orientated existence as well as the niceties of life, while Isaac doubted that one could have both. So Yitzchak, and this sort of fits in a little bit with the Malbim, Yitzchak, you know, you've either got to be spiritual or physical. He did not think it possible to be a committed servant to the Almighty and still have the Tal HaShamayim. As a result, Isaac originally intended the latter blessing be bestowed upon Esau, not recognizing Esau to be a murderer and a cheat. Isaac assumed that Esau would at least follow the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, Noah's moral code. So Yitzchak felt he had a choice. You either get the spirituality or you get some material stuff, and he would give each brother one of those blessings. Rebecca had a different view of the material benefits in Isaac's blessing. The Torah teaches man how to combine both spiritual and physical objectives, how to plan, how to succeed, and at the same time observe the covenant. Man is both a metaphysical as well as a secular being. The Torah takes man's mundane activities and hallows them. One must work 6 days and hallow the seventh to God, abstaining to raise oneself spiritually. To the poor we must give 10%, disciplining ourselves to withdraw, to give away, is part of our service of the Almighty. Without the Tal HaShamayim, Jacob could not absorb this vital lesson. Essentially, Rivka believed that the two can go together. You can have spirituality and materialism, and in actual fact, the two will enhance each other, at least, you know, to some degree. That's, you learn lessons, that's, without being wealthy, you can't learn to give stuff away. If you're a very poor person, fine, you give a bit of some staka, you know, a pruta here, a pruta there. You don't learn to be generous to other people. You don't learn benevolence. You don't learn to be a benefactor. That's all sorts of things you can learn from having material wealth. And therefore, whereas Yitzchak thought they were non-reconcilable, Rivka believed they were compatible. I suppose Yitzchak believed they were incompatible, and Rivka believed they were compatible. Let's just finish off with a comment of the Kli Yakar on this pasuk of Yitzchak L'chaylokim. So the bracha that Yitzchak initially gives is Yitzchak L'chaylokim Yitzchak L'shamayim Yishmanei Haaretz. Hashem should give you from the fat of the land, from the dew of the heavens and the fat of the land. So Rashi says, what does it mean, v'yiten lecha? It should be yiten lecha. Why is it v'yiten lecha? Rashi says that it's yiten lecha, v'yachzor v'yiten lecha. Repeatedly, you'll get and you'll get even more. Be bracha, Rashi doesn't say, but be bracha b'li dai, continual blessing. Kliyaka says differently. V'yeshorim shevav shol v'yiten, why does it say v'yiten, and Hashem will give? Hora asher lo yismoch adam al anes. Teaches us that a person mustn't rely on a miracle. Ela yaseh shelo k'chol hashem sabukoh chol asot. Person should do everything that he can do. U'mashe yechsar hateva, that's yashlim ha'nes. And what you can't do in the normal way, so a nes will finish it off for you. K'mo she'amru chazal, yachol afil yoshiv batel, talmud lomar b'chol hashet aseh. Chazal say in the Midrash Halacha, that, you might have thought that Hashem is going to bless you in all sorts of ways. He needs to sit there twiddling your thumbs. No, Hashem will bless you b'chol asher taseh in everything that you do. But you've got to do things. L'kach ne'emar v'yitein, that's why it says, and Hashem will give. L'omar, achash asita k'var kol asher ya b'kochach la'asot. Once you've done what you can do, as gam Hashem yitein lecha me'ot zaratov, then Hashem will give you his blessings. Meaning you work hard first, and then yitein lecha, Hashem will give you blessings. But don't think you can just sit there. It's a bit like the story, the man's chatting to his friend. The friend says to him, how's your new son-in-law? He says, he's wonderful. He thinks that I'm God. He says, what do you mean he thinks that you're God? Every time I try and talk to him about a parnasa, and how's he going to survive, and how's he going to make a living, he says to me, God will provide. At the moment, I'm paying the bills, so he must think that I'm God. No, Hashem will provide, providing that you do the hishtadlut first. You do what you've got to do, and then, v'yitein l'chai elokim, then Hashem will give you further blessings. Okay, that's Parashat Toldot. That's next week, Bezrat Hashem will be Vayitze, same time, same place. Thank you all.
Sure. I won't be here next week. I apologize.